the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
David Moyler, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Plenty of football to talk about, but I've got to start by asking you, Tipperary Munster football champions, Cork too arrogant. Who ever thought that Cork could ever be too arrogant, David?
I know. It's just, look, fair play to Tip. Obviously disappointing. You know, Cork wouldn't be going in after, especially after beating Kerry, you know, thinking that they're going to win the Munster final. So it'd be hugely disappointing, but, you know, fair play to Tip. And then obviously Cavan and Mayo. So I've seen the stats of, you know, the last time before provisional titles were won by these counties was 1920. So that's quite remarkable.
Yeah, it is. It is. Sometimes the underdog has its day, and yesterday was one of those days. Let's start by talking about Liverpool. We played a clip of Jurgen Klopp there. Very, very straightforward, very matter of fact. We like the clean sheet. We like the performance. And of course, we like the 3 points. But it feels like it's a bit more than that. It felt like this was a big, big weekend because that was a team, loads of injuries, loads of uncertainty, bouncing back into action after the international break, and not a beat missed.
No, definitely. Look, they came out and they were, from the first minute, were on the front foot, you know, took the game to Leicester. Albeit I was disappointed with Leicester, and certainly in the way they've been going, you know, they were top of the table. I know it's only 8 games, but they were very passive and they just let Liverpool play. And I think if there was a time to ever go to Anfield and kind of try and get at them or take them on, it was certainly last night, you know, with the key injuries they're missing with Trent, Gomez, you know, Virgil, Henderson, Salah, all out, Thiago as well. It was a chance, but like at the same time, Jota's been in incredible form. The young boy Curtis Jones has come on leaps and bounds in the last probably, you know, 6 to 9 months. And of course, James Milner's been a, you know, mainstay in the Premier League for so long that they just kind of slotted in naturally. And, you know, it was an incredible performance for Liverpool and they fully deserved the 3 points.
It's interesting looking at how good Liverpool were in last night's game and how good they were over the course of Christmas last year as well. And that game against Leicester City was also the game that kickstarted an unbelievably dominant run, or really was in the middle of a very dominant run. Why does Klopp have such success against Brendan Rodgers and this Leicester side? What is it? Was there any parallels between the two games?
I don't know. Maybe it's because, you know, Jurgen has taken over for Brendan that it's a little kind of mental block or something. There's no doubt that Leicester are a fantastic side, but they just seem to come up short against Liverpool. You know, is it something? Like, it's almost like that Leicester side last night in that game certainly showed too much, you know, respect. They didn't get, you know, if you looked at the way they played, they changed formations to go to the, kind of the four with the two attacking midfielders. You know, I think it was about the 60th minute. But like before that, it just kind of left the game past them by, and they left Liverpool dictate the pace. You know, Liverpool were creating chance after chance. You know, I watched Jurgen Klopp speak after on Sky Sports, and I think the only thing he was disappointed about was that they didn't score more goals. So it is something, but at the same time, a few of the players have spoken, and like James Milner said, it's been very hard for them to kind of get on a run with the international breaks. Of course, we've had a few of them, but now they were certainly looking last night with that game to kind of start that run going into the busy Christmas period. So with that victory, you can kind of get the feel from the camp that they want to kick on and put together a great run.
Because the wisdom might have been out there that after they did Manchester City earlier in the season, maybe they could have done a similar job to Liverpool last night. And I think there might have been a little bit of fear that that could have happened given the injuries that Liverpool have had. Has there been a further step forward then from Klopp in terms of handling a team who are so brilliant on the counter-attack?
Well, I think you've got to give a lot of credit to, you know, someone like Fabinho. Even though, like, he's not a natural centre-half and he's playing, like, he played there last night, but it's just his ability to read the game and to read, you know, the situation as it unfolds on, you know, where the player's looking to try and play, where's the space, how can I, you know, nullify it? Like, even the smallest thing of, like, when Milner goes into midfield, it adds that stability, which, like, of course, you know, Naby Keita is a fantastic player, but it was just something different. And he just, Jurgen seems to find ways to make the team tick. Now, if you look on the flip side of that, the other game that we'll probably go on to mention at some stage, Tottenham and Man City, Tottenham had a unique game plan in the sense that they were just like happy for Man City to have the ball, and they caught them on the counter-attack. So that there is a case for, you know, for both of them that, you know, if you sit deep in a low block and try and frustrate your opponents, that you can catch them. Tottenham did it superbly, but then Leicester tried to do it and they just couldn't get anything going. So there is, you know, a case for both that it can work, but then the early, like, the earlier you kind of score in those cases, it does help. And, you know, if you look at Liverpool score, I won't say early on, but like compared to Tottenham, but, you know, in the sense that Tottenham then have something to, you know, fight for, whereas Leicester then have to change the game plan and come out and attack Liverpool, which then suits Liverpool, you know, certainly with the form some of those players are in.
And we'll come to that in just a moment, but just one final point on Liverpool. Roberto Firmino getting that goal last night. Obviously, Jota's form as well. The conversation around Firmino is that, right, okay, Jota's form, statistically anyway, means that he might actually just be pipping Firmino to a starting spot. It's very, very hard to make that conclusion now, isn't it, David?
Look, I've said this, I don't know for how long. Roberto Firmino is like Jurgen Klopp's number one player on the team sheet. I don't think people kind of realise that. Of all the superstars they have, he is the, you know, the front line, and he's the one who sets the press off and all the work he does. I know anyone looking on, even Liverpool fans, or, you know, he doesn't score enough goals, or at least not scored enough goals. In the past, he has scored more goals. That's the big thing. And with the form Jota's in, but the massive thing for Jurgen is, whenever, you know, Salah, Mane or Firmino have been injured, the next player in has usually been like Divock Origi or Shaqiri. Haven't been able to hit the same heights as the others, which is understandable there. You know, they're exceptional players in each position. But then when you sign someone like Jota, now at the time, everyone was thinking, oh, he's great. He's just below them. He's really showing with his, you know, as the form he's been in, the goals he scored. Like, I think he's got 5-5 now in the Premier League for Liverpool, which is like remarkable that he really is pushing. And now Jurgen has the difficult job of actually finding a way to get them all in, because I know he'll not want to drop Firmino, but then Jota deserves to be playing. So, look, it's a great selection headache for him to have, because when you have players playing that well, it's only good for the team.
And he's better than Harry Kane, right?
No. Oh, I love Firmino, but he's not better than Harry Kane. But I did catch a few nibbles on Twitter with that one. A lot of people were getting a bit Twitter's too easy at times.
Especially late on Sunday night when everybody's a little tired and emotional.
Yeah. And of course, look, Firmino hasn't scored and everyone's tweeting about him. And oh, it did make my evening.
I'd say so. Speaking of Harry Kane, though, he is like whatever fears people had about Mourinho coming into Spurs and the arc of his career heading down, whatever issues Jose Mourinho's had over the last couple of years, it seems like he just didn't have players who were good enough to do what he wanted to do. Now that he's got players who are doing what he wants to do, his team looks really good.
No, they do. And that's kind of, for the other teams, that's kind of a worry, in the sense that, like, I was on the Saturday show with JD and that, and I know he supports Spurs, and I just kind of downright dismissed them as, you know, title contenders. But it was interesting to watch Mourinho speak after the game. And I think if you look back at his time at Manchester United, he kind of looked fed up, you know, someone who'd been around the block a while, who'd seen it all. And then it was kind of, he'd lost his mojo. But then, you know, it was quite interesting to hear him after the game. Like, he said, I don't care what position we are. You know, I just want to win the next game. Like, if we're first, then he says, then if Leicester go and play and they win, they'll go top. But I don't care. We've won our match. I want to win the next match. I want to win football. It just sounded to me like he had that bit back between his teeth, you know, that he was like, you know, I'm like, people are dismissing me or writing me off. And, you know, I don't know, but he certainly had that spark in him that, like, I'm going to be successful with Spurs. And look, his track record suggests he's won a trophy everywhere he's been. And then you look at the type of the performance. And the big thing is, like, at the end of the first half, Harry Kane had made the most tackles on the pitch. You know, and if you're looking at that, you're kind of thinking, well, Harry Kane is their goal scorer, or, you know, the front man who leads the line. But he's making, you know, so many tackles. He's back in his own box tackling. Like, I imagine most people have watched the All or Nothing, the documentary on Tottenham when Mourinho came in. And, you know, I can't remember what game it is, but he speaks about, we can't be nice guys, we have to be nasty. and they certainly have that now. Like, they just look different. I think the signing of Højbjerg in midfield has been, you know, has been immense for them. And then he just, he seems to have tweaked Ndombele, who's turned into a right good player. He always had it in him, but now he's finding a way to get more out of him for the team, rather than a lot of his performances before were individual. But look, they look like a, you know, a great outfit, and you know, they'll, the way they're going, they should be there, thereabouts at the end of the season.
Harry Kane seems to be like a Premier League version of Patrick Mahomes, where he can drop deep and is... I don't think he got a single shot on goal, actually, on Saturday night. But still, he's got 7 Premier League goals to his name already this season. So it's not like we're shoehorning him into being, you know, a deep-lying playmaker at this point. He has got both in his locker. And the question is, pre-game, how do you actually stop that? Because you perhaps aren't fully sure what version of Harry Kane is actually going to be deployed against you.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. Harry Kane did an interview after the game, and he spoke about how obviously he'd been dropping deep to get on the ball. But he highlighted the fact that he felt that the centre-halves would come with them. So it was obviously something that they had spoken about and worked on, that Harry was going to drop it deep. And then when you've got someone like Stephen Bergwijn, and of course the form Heung-min Son's in, like sprinting in behind, like... We saw for the goal, Harry Kane comes short, Laporte goes with him, Diaz is caught in no man's land, Ndombele just flicks it over the top, and Heung-min Son's in. So it was almost as if Mourinho had all thought that, you know, the tactician in Guardiola and the way he plays. But certainly with Harry Kane, like, he's got 9 Premier League assists already. He, like, as you said, he's got 7 goals. And the thing is, his contributions are massive with goals and assists. And look, they look a real good team. If they can keep them all fit and keep playing the way they're playing, then who knows what they can do.
The thing about that attacking setup is that Spurs destroyed Southampton doing the exact same thing very early in the season when Son scored his 4 goals. It's almost as if Pep Guardiola hasn't watched much tape of Tottenham this year and wasn't expecting this.
He might, like, it's a hard thing, because the way Man City play, like, and I think certainly if you highlight the second goal that Lo Celso gets, like, Kyle Walker, like, they push their fullbacks on. And then it turns out Kyle Walker's high up the pitch. I'm not saying it's his fault or anything, but he's high up the pitch. They're dominant. They lose possession. It's a quick few passes. Harry gets on the ball, you know. And then it's Kevin De Bruyne is the one that's trying to close down Lo Celso, because, you know, they counter-attack them so well. It's just the biggest problem City had the other night was it was just... as much as possession they had and they were dominating, they were knocking the ball around, they were just too slow. There was no... they left Spurs get back into the low block and get men behind the ball. You know, when Man City have been at their best, they move it a lot quicker. But I just... I don't know what it is with City at the moment. They're just... I know, look, Aguero's missing. You know, Sterling came on late on, but they just... they... you know, I still feel that they will be there, thereabouts. But, you know... Pep does have a big... I think the biggest problem he has is he has too many, you know, world-class players that he doesn't have a select 11. If we look at any of the other teams, like if you talked about Liverpool, Manchester United, Chelsea, Tottenham, you can pick their 11. I think with Man City, we don't know their best 11 if all players are available. And I think that's the hardest thing that he has so many good players that his old squad rotation doesn't... it doesn't seem to me like that they're getting into a consistent form. I know they've been, you know, struggling with injuries, but that seems to be the biggest problem they have.
Is the gap too big from Manchester City to Liverpool now? Like, it feels... that's why I this weekend felt so important, because what Liverpool were able to do with all their injuries was continue to play the same way that they've always played, so that there's been an inculcation of, this is what our belief system are, this is what our philosophy is, this is what we're all going to do, this is how we do things. The fluke against Villa, you take that out, the rest of the season has been really, really good. With Man City, it's been up and down. And actually, I think they lacked intensity as well. Mm. They lacked the kind of... they lacked exactly what Liverpool don't lack. And that's every week we perform to the exact same level. That's why it feels like... I can't see City pulling back... it's 8 points, it's 5 points if they win their game in hand. And I wouldn't bet on them to win that game in hand too. It just felt like this weekend, that gap's too big for City now. To Liverpool anyway.
It's tough. You know, we're 9 games in. You know, it's easy to write them off and say, the thing is, as you said, if they win their game in hand, they're 5 points, and Man City haven't been great all year. They've had good games and they've had bad games. They've not been able to get into a consistent form. But at the same time, of course, it's easy to say they mightn't win their game in hand, but if they do, they're 5 points. Now, if they lose, then that is a huge, you know, psychological block on them. You know, I just feel we're 9 games in. Like, Man City are capable, if they get, you know, a team together and get a bit of form, you know, get that lucky win that kind of, you know, lifts them against a big side, and then they're more than capable of going like on a 5-6-7, you know, winning streak. I wouldn't write them off yet. If we were, you know, the back end of Christmas going into January and they were 8 points behind Liverpool, then you'd say it's a lot to do. But at this stage, I don't think you can afford to write them off. But at the same time, if Liverpool continue to go the way they're going, like, the big thing is Liverpool are playing at Anfield without fans. You know, if you imagine that's sold out as well, the intensity will go up another level. It's actually quite remarkable to see the level they're able to play at without fans, you know, kind of giving them that extra boost. Because if you ask any player that has ever played at Anfield, it is a very difficult place to go. So Liverpool being able to keep that intensity going, you know, without fans is huge. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it gets on. But I wouldn't, certainly, Joe, I wouldn't write off Man City at this stage.
Dave, just to wrap up then, the FAI released a statement last night saying they're not going to take any further English into the reportedly, any further action into the reportedly anti-English video that was shown in the Ireland dressing room before the England game. They say the case is closed. I think that's a fair thing to take from the statement last night. What's your whole take been on this and how things have now finished up with no further investigation last night?
It's a very tough one. You know, for someone like me that, you know, I've been involved in with Ireland for years, you know, you hear stories. Like, we all hear different stories. And the problem is, I wasn't in the room. You guys weren't in the room. We don't know the video. We don't know what was said. It's very hard to comment on it. We hear different snippets of different things of what came out. I think the most disappointing thing that I think a lot of people have highlighted is what happens in a changing room stays in a changing room. If there had been a problem, I don't know, was it a senior staff member or a backroom staff member or a player, that it couldn't have been brought up internally and dealt with internally, then it, you know, for it to get leaked to the press is disappointing. Because, look, there'll always be things go on in change rooms all over the world with, you know, clubs or international setups that you kind of want to, you don't want it leaked to the press, that it kind of gets out everywhere. Because it ended up being, after, you know, the Bulgaria game, it was just a kind of a sideshow from what Stephen's actually trying to do. And, you know, I'm just happy that it's all put to bed, so that he can, you know, the players certainly can crack on with their own clubs, and then we can, you know, he can look and reflect on, you know, his opening 8 games and then build on something for March time. Because, look, it's Ireland, England at the same time. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Of course, there was going to be somebody said something at some stage about the history in Ireland. You know, I think the big debate was, is it pro-Irish or anti-English? You know, nobody knows unless you were in the changing room. But certainly I would have felt it's a big rivalry. So I imagine something was said somewhere by someone. So, you know, it would have been the case. And even I listened to John Hayes the other day talking. I imagine somebody had said something in an Irish rugby changing room. Do you know what I mean? It's our biggest rival. Do you know? So
yeah,
these things happen.
Yeah.
Do you know, that's the thing. Like, it's...
I was worried that somebody in the FAI is working against the national team manager at the moment. They're trying to... It was the lead story in Sky Sports News. It was the lead story in TalkSport. It was on the back page of the London Times. Stephen Kenny, I would say, has a strong case against those media organisations that his reputation has been impugned, because there's no way, there's not a part of him that is anti-English. Not a single part of him is anti-English. And his chances of getting a job in England, I would say, have been damaged as a result of this. So somebody within the FAI decided that the right thing to do was to go to the Daily Mail and tell them that story. You can't be having that, can you? Like, he can't feel good about that. The FAI, the top brass in the FAI, cannot feel good that somebody there was ratting him out to to an English media organisation.
That's the problem. Like, look, I've been involved in professional football for a long time. I've seen things happen in change rooms. And the last thing you want is anything leaked, you know, to the press. because it gets drawn out of proportion. Like, of course, look, from the statement, we believe, you know, Stephen has sat down with the higher ups in the FAI. He sorted his problems out, or whatever it was that he sorted the issue out, so they share rather than the problem. You know, senior players were called, you know, the other staff were called, and everyone showed support from, you know, and they said case closed. So it's been completely blown out of proportion. And it's just sidetracks from what Stephen's trying to do. Do you know, he's worked so hard in his past to get to this level. You know, I know you talked about there, it might influence, you know, a job opportunity in England. I think, you know, by the time that comes around, that when his international management career is over, I think by then, I think this will be long forgotten about. He'll be basically judged on his success with Ireland. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But again, the problem is somebody in the changing room, or someone in the backroom staff, or whoever it is obviously leaking out information, which isn't great, which is disappointing, because, like you said, you're kind of trying to be a close-knit group and you want to be all together. And then to think that somebody, because going forward, Stephen might then change the way he announces the team, thinking this person could go and leak that information. Do you know? So I hope they find the person and then they sort that out with them. So it doesn't, you know, fall or filter anything going forward.
No, fair point. And hopefully that's the last time we get to talk about Ireland for about 5 or 6 months. David, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Cheers, lads. Thank you.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.